Good afternoon. We have still some people coming in. There's plenty of room. Hope you enjoy Tech Day so far. I have, that's for sure. So today and right now we're going to look a little bit in the future of ASP.NET and Visual Studio, and mostly Visual Studio. My name is Mads Christensen. I'm a program manager on the Web Platforms and Tools team. So our team builds all the ASP.NET framework bits, you know, MVC, Razor, Web API, those sort of things. But we also build all the tooling that goes along with it. So all the MVC tooling, the JavaScript, CSS, and HTML editors in Visual Studio, and all the related technologies around that. So I'm sure that you all have seen Visual Studio 2012. I'm going to show you some stuff that maybe you haven't noticed. But then we're going to look a lot of into the future. What are some of the experiments that we're doing? What are some of the prototypes that we have that you're going to see rolled into some official releases of Visual Studio going forward? I assume that you're all web developers. So this is a level 300 talk. I will not kind of go into any web-specific structures, how websites are built, or anything like that. I assume you all are well aware of how that works. So before we kind of dive into all the demos, let's take a look at where we were in 2010, where we are in 2012 for Visual Studio, and then where we are today and looking a little bit in the future. So we have three editors, right? CSS, HTML, and JavaScript. Everything we do as web developers happens in these three editors in Visual Studio. So the HTML editor, that's also where we have all our Razor and web forms. It handles CSS and JavaScript, C Sharp, and Visual Basic. It is by far the most complex editor in Visual Studio because it has to deal with all these different languages. So let's take a look at Visual Studio 2010. These are the number of features that we had. There's no numbers on here. It's more in relative terms. But what we can see here is basically that for CSS, we did not really have a good story. Now, this was not only Visual Studio. This was across the board. Dreamweaver, Sublime, any other editor basically had a very, very poor story for CSS. Basically, syntax highlighting and basic IntelliSense. And that was our story as well in 2010. HTML, we did way better. We had a lot more features, and so did we for JavaScript. So this was 2010, and here is 2012. This was August 2012, we released this. We actually made big, big, big improvements. There's now 6 times the amount of features in the CSS editor over 2010. This is not a small, little, insignificant change. This is actually huge. For HTML, we have 50% more features. And for JavaScript, we have twice as many features. So I've always said that Visual Studio 2012 is the most significant release of Visual Studio for web developers ever. And this is the chart to prove it. Then we do a lot of other stuff. So you might have noticed that we've released some products after August when we released Visual Studio 2012. We had the first Visual Studio update. We had some Azure tools that also had some web components. We had the first Web Tools 2012.2 update. And very soon there's going to be a Visual Studio Update 2, again, with new features all the time. And then we have this little extra thing called Web Essentials. Show of hands, how many people here knows Web Essentials? Awesome. That's a lot of hands. I'm very pleased because I wrote the thing. So that's awesome. That's also why there are some problems now and again. But if we take Web Essentials, which is a free extension for Visual Studio 2012, there is a version for 2010 as well, but it's not as feature-rich. But for 2012, if we install Web Essentials, this is the numbers we get. So for CSS, we get a lot more features. Actually, we get 90% of the features that I have in our backlog of stuff I want to do. 90% can be realized through Web Essentials. And a lot of these things are going to at some point be transferred into an official released product. For HTML, we can do a little bit better. We have some trouble with HTML, and that is that it's the editor itself is a little bit old. The CSS editor for Visual Studio 2012 is brand new. It's completely rewritten from scratch. Everything is new, and the same is true for JavaScript. So the potential in what we can actually achieve in CSS and JavaScript is almost 100% of what we want to achieve. Right? There is nothing in Visual Studio that prohibits us for adding those extra features. That is not the case for HTML, and that's why you see the number of features here is a little lower. We just released WebTools 2012.2. And from Web Essentials, we had some big features that actually moved from this little playground extension called Web Essentials and into an officially supported product. So we have a LESS editor. We have some cool new JSON capabilities, CoffeeScript editor, and mustache and handlebar syntax highlighting. These things all started out in this little playground, Web Essentials V6 or extension. And it's only through all the feedback that you guys have given on user voice and elsewhere based on Web Essentials that we were able to bring these features in. So it is kind of an important component, Web Essentials, but it is very much unsupported. As I told you, I wrote the code, and there is no unit tests. Okay? Of course, that is not the code that makes it into the official product. That's some professional developers that does that, not me. Okay. So, let's take a look at some of the new fun stuff we have been building. So with 2012.2, which we released last Monday, I believe it was, last week, we have some new templates that allows us to do a lot of new stuff. And we have what's called a single page application. I have it right here. It's an MVC project. Basically, you go say file new project, MVC 4, and then you have a single page application right here. We also have Facebook. We're not going to talk about that, but we have a single page application. So let's just back out of this one, and it closed my solution. So here we go. Now, let me run this, but let me run this in Page Inspector. Does anyone here know Page Inspector? A handful. Okay. Page Inspector was actually included in Visual Studio 2012 RTM. But and it's right here. I just right-click any file, any ASPX or CSHTML file, or my project file in this case, and I can say View in Page Inspector. And it opens the Page Inspector window. It fires up IIS or IIS Express, whatever you have, whatever you're using. And we can now see that we have like this browser hosting my site inside Visual Studio. We have the full DOM elements here. It looks a little bit weird. My fonts are. I'm in presentation mode, so my fonts are pretty big here, so it looks weird. But basically, you have the entire DOM tree, as we know from Chrome tools and IE tools and so on. But here's a really, really cool thing. I see here that I have a typo, and I want to fix that. Where in my project does this live? I have probably a lot of files here, so where does this little link up here come from? Well, with Page Inspector, I can basically just inspect, hover, click, and takes me right to the file, user settings, CSHTML, and I can very, very easily fix the problem. So notice how we don't actually open any tabs except for the preview tab. So as I hover, this is indexed CSHTML, the layout page, and I can find stuff that's even written like here in pure C#. So from the rendered output in the browser, which this is just IE9 or IE10, whatever you have installed, we actually can map the individual DOM element to the source file, even if it came from C# or some code behind. So really, really powerful stuff. We have a new feature for Page Inspector that just came out. And that is we can now do JavaScript mapping. So what's interesting about this single page application template that you're seeing right here is that the post-it note is actually rendered through the knockout JavaScript library. So it's not rendered just through an ordinary HTML or some server-side control or anything. It's JavaScript that renders it using Knockout as a data binding template. So this is actually drawn through JavaScript. So when I hover any dynamic element that's generated through JavaScript, you can see that it now changes color to orange. It still selects correctly exactly where in my code, in my template, which this is, that I created these elements. But actually, the way that it reached the DOM was through JavaScript. So I can click here. And we now have this call stack. If I click the call stack, I can see how this post-it note was generated. And here, it's difficult to see, but this is actually a different color. I can see where in my own code that I did something interesting. And that was right here. So this is my user code that actually made the call into Knockout that, in turn, drew that post-it note on the page. So this is really, really awesome if you want to do inspection. And again, this can't really, no one else can really do this. We need the instrumentation code. We instrument all the code. You don't notice that, but that's actually what's happening. So we know exactly where, what, when, one, what happens, and where in the code it happens. So really, really nice for debugging. But of course, we also have the styles here. So let me just find the to-do list. That's my post-it note. I can click it, and we open the exact location and mark exactly where what you just clicked here. And here's a new little detail. If I change something, I don't save, I just make changes, for instance, to a color, then in real time, we're updating the page. See? I didn't save the document, I didn't refresh anything. It happens as I type. So that is nice. But let's take a look at the HTML here. Let's just go in here. So this is my Knockout.js template that I'm using. So this is the post-it note. And one thing that we've just added is support for Knockout IntelliSense. So this is, I wasn't sure that we could do it because it is a little bit rocket science, but we actually pulled it off. So here's how it works. I have my JavaScript models right here. You can see we have like the to-do item here has a title and some properties and methods and whatnot. And what I can do with it is, let's just go here, invoke IntelliSense, and we can now see that I get full IntelliSense for my Knockout, custom Knockout view models. So Knockout is really, really difficult to get started with because that there is no, you don't know exactly what goes where unless you have the IntelliSense right here. So not only do we support the values, but we also have all the bindings. This includes your custom bindings if you're using that. How many people here use or know Knockout.js, by the way? Okay, that's half the room. That's cool. So there's probably a lot of you saying, well, I don't use Knockout. I want to use something else. And that is perfectly fine. We ship Knockout out of the box. We support it. It's not our project. It's Steve Sanderson's project. And he created it before he joined Microsoft. So it's actually just a regular open source project. But we ship it with Visual Studio, and we support it as well. So let me go over here. If you want to use something that's not Knockout, for instance, Ember, then we also now include full colorization, as you see right here, of handlebars, mustache, and JS render. They're all similar syntaxes based on the double curly brace. And they all work, and you get really nice syntax highlighting from that automatically. So we have some new features there. So this is all official. This is all supported. Now let's play around with some stuff here. Let's create a menu. Let me just zoom in. Let's create a menu. That's a UL element. And inside the UL, I want 5 LIs. And inside my LIs, I want an A tag with the text click here. Okay. I hit tap. And I hit tap again, and it jumps through all the edit points. This is called send coding. But we can do a little bit more. We can do an HTML, let's do an HTML5 document. Let's put a section element, and inside that I want 5 P tags. And I want some lorem ipsum text, 10 words of lorem ipsum text in each of these P elements. I hit tap. Here we go. This is Web Essentials. This is not in the official yet. We're working on that. And by the way, all this stuff I'm showing you that's like prototype or experimental like this, please give me feedback, Twitter, user voice, wherever, because it's kind of what you vote for that is going to make it first into an official supported product. And that includes this feature right here. Okay. Yeah, speaking of that, this is another one. I have never had any feedback on this. This was in the original and first version of Web Essentials. No one has ever commented on it. Let's create a div. So you know that you can kind of do this stuff, right? I hope you've seen this. This is my absolute favorite feature. Let's just create a div. Now, I'm going to mark my tag. Go to Web Essentials. And this is where it gets a little bit weird. I go down here, encode selection, and I can say HTML encode, URL encode. This is really handy for a lot of scenarios. I can also do transform selection. And I can do stupid stuff like, hey, MD5 hash my string. Right? I thought, okay, I'm going to try it, see if people like it. But no one told me that they didn't, but no one told me they did either, so it's still here. But you can reverse the string. So let's do that. So now it's reversed. And so this is the only use case I have for this feature so far. All right. So JavaScript, as I told you, it's brand new. The editor was written from scratch in 2012. It's built on top of Chakra. That's the IE10 JavaScript engine. Really, really fast, really, really powerful, and supports all the new stuff, all the latest and greatest, ECMAScript 5 and so on. But here are probably some things that you didn't know. Let's say I create an object, OBJ. Here are three ways that I'm going to add a property to the OBJ object. I'm doing it in three different ways. Here, I'm assigning a string to the variable A, an integer or a number, to B. And here, I'm creating a C property with the value of a DOM element, an image DOM element here. So you would expect that if I invoke IntelliSense on object, that I get A, B, and C, right? Now, the reason we can do this is because we actually run your JavaScript code. Most other editors, I think actually all of them, they don't actually run your editor, your code. What they do instead is they look after symbols. They look for certain scenarios. But it breaks very, very easily. And one of the cases where it usually breaks is when you do stuff like this, especially the defined property here. But it's more than that. If I do A dot, this is a string. We can see that the intelligence I get is that of a string, to lowercase, to uppercase, and so on. And B is a number, to exponential, to fixed. And C is that of a DOM element. Right? That's because Chakra, the IE engine, just looks at the OBJ object and knows kind of what the return types are. So very, very accurate IntelliSense. Let's do something else. Let's create a list, which is just an array. We give it a number, give it a string, and let's just give it, again, a new DOM element right here. So let's loop through these. If I say list I, and I invoke IntelliSense, what do I get? Anyone? Well, you get that of a number. Right, to exponential, to fixed. Why is that? Well, very simple, because I equals 0. Well, if I was 1, you get that of a string. Right? And just for the fun of it, we get the full DOM element here. So this is, if nothing else, proof that we do actually run your code. We can do a little bit more than that. If I create a function here, let's call it move, take an I, x and a y. what my function here is doing, or what I want it to do, is to take two numbers, an x and a y coordinate, and then do something with these coordinates. It could be like geolocation, something with geolocation, for instance. So if I do x dot, in the right place up here, if I do x dot, it says, well, I don't know what it is. It has no idea. It just lists the symbols that it can find in the document. It has no idea what's going on. And how would it know this? JavaScript is dynamic, right? So there is no way for it to know this. And the same goes here. If I want to call my function, it just says x and a y. I have no idea if I'm consuming someone else's code, someone else's move function. I don't know what to expect here. So it would be kind of nice if I were able to kind of use some Visual Studio magic to help me out here. And if I do triple slash, just like in C sharp, I get this nice little thing. So we can give it a summary. Move to something. And now we say here that the parameter x is of type object, and so is y. But that's not exactly what I want. I want numbers. Number is like integer, but in JavaScript, the type is called number. So what I can do is just change the type here to number. You all know this little trick by holding down the Alt key, right? So now it's a number. So that means if I now call my method or function, I now get the correct IntelliSense. So this is what we know from C sharp, right? The same kind of deal here. Now, we don't actually validate that you're doing something illegal. Like, what could that be? This is not really a number, is it? There's not really a good way to know this. It is feedback that we have gotten, but JavaScript is dynamic. We can't really know all the time what type it actually is, this string. We're not going to call it out as an error. But you get this very nice IntelliSense description right here. And here's a funny little thing. For those of you who know Sublime Text, they have a really, really good core editor. They can do a lot of funky stuff, like multi-point editing and certain other things. And I have an extension here that's written very recently by the Visual Studio core editor team. It's free. It's on the Visual Studio Gallery. It's called multi-editing. And basically, I can just place the caret, hit down Alt, and then place it again somewhere else. And again, somewhere else. And then I can start typing. And you can see here, we can do the exact same tricks. So there's a lot. This is to illustrate that there's actually a lot of good functionality out there in these free extensions. A lot of them are written by Microsoft employees, like in their spare time, like this one. All right. And by the way, feel free to ask me questions as we go along. I know it's probably difficult if you're sitting way in the back up there, but I'll try to answer them. There is one here. The question is, does the triple slash comment have to be inside the function? Yes. This is the syntax that we introduced in 2010, I believe it was. And it basically, it has to be inside. What we have considered, because most people will do as in C#, they will perhaps find it natural, is to go up here and do a triple slash. Nothing happens. What I'm envisioning is that if you do that, we'll just add it to the inside of the function. That's kind of the limitation right now. There's an extension. WebEssential actually does provide support for JS doc comments if you want to do that, and they exist on top of functions. Okay, any more JavaScript questions? No? All right. So let's move on to everyone's favorite technology, CSS. How many people love CSS? Love CSS. 8 people. There's a good reason for that, I believe. It's not that CSS sucks. It's that tooling has never really been great. For me, I think of it like as a chicken and egg thing. Tooling is not very good, so people don't want to write CSS. No one wants to write CSS, so we don't get any feature requests, so we don't improve tooling, and so it goes around and around. And that's actually how WebEssential started. It started out of my frustration that CSS in 2010, or whenever I started the original WebEssentials, was still just text editing. There was no help. There was nothing that would help me write CSS. And it was difficult. This was when CSS 3 was starting to become really big and something you could actually use. And everything was manual. Actually, Visual Studio 2010 would complain every time I tried to use stuff like border radius, saying, oh, no. That border radius does not exist. So what do? You turn off the errors, right? That's what I did. In 2012, you must never, ever, ever turn off the errors. So let's take a look. This is 2012 with WebEssentials, and so it looks a little bit different. You can see just right off the bat that we have these color squares next to every color. This is really nice. You can kind of get a good feeling of what's going on, of what colors you're using. Colors is one of those workflows that's really difficult, because what do you actually do when you want to take a color from an app or a website and use it in your own? Well, you probably go to the website in your favorite browser, and you take a screenshot. And then you perhaps open Photoshop, use 2 gigs of memory doing that, and you figure out, like, what is the hex value, and then you close down Photoshop, and then you go back into Visual Studio and paste it in. And then it wasn't exactly what you thought it was going to be, right? And then you do the whole thing all over again. That's how I built my websites, by the way, until recently. Because now I can just click the color here, and it gives me a color picker. So this color picker actually is pretty brilliant. This is just the most recently used list of colors. And basically what it does, it takes the colors that I have in my document. That's the first 2 colors. You can see we have them right here in the first CSS rule. And the rest is just like for rapid prototyping, just rainbow colors. But that's actually pretty nice. Of course, I can hit the down arrow key or click this guy right here, and I get the full thing. And I can just start partying on this. CSS 3, I can actually control the opacity. If I go all the way back up, it snaps back to whatever format I was using. So that's all very nice. But what I really want to do is to eliminate that workflow issue I have where I have to go through Photoshop and do print screen and all that stuff. So now we have this color picker, or eyedropper, sorry. You just click it, and you can point this anywhere on the screen, multi-monitor, multi-apps, doesn't matter. Just point and click. So we're going to take this color right here. And that's basically it. So very, very, very easy way to work with colors. Now, I'm sure you've seen this before. Oh, the color doesn't really work. It has to be a little bit darker because I have to use it for text. Text, you usually, when you use a color, you usually want it a little bit darker. And that's really difficult. How do you just darken a color a little bit? Well, what if you could just hold down Control-Shift and use your mouse or your arrows up and down? Let's try that. Right. It's all about these workflows. It's all about removing these little tiny paper cuts that we have to go through every day. Developer happiness, productivity, so on. That's what's really important here. And other interesting things that we have here is, since we rewrote the CSS editor, we brought everything up to speed, like on par with everything you expect, stuff that you can do in in C#, for instance. We want to make sure that your muscle memory carries over into CSS and JavaScript and HTML, and there's like a parity, right? Everything works sort of the same. Your muscle memory carries through the Visual Studio experience. That was not possible before. Here's a really, really stupid little thing, but I think it's important because this is one of those examples of muscle memory. Control KC to comment something. Completely impossible before, but now you can. So this is sort of the level of stuff we've been doing. All these small little things. Outlining. Hierarchical indentation. Stuff like that. To make it more easy, more comfortable writing this code. Now, you've all worked with fonts. And so I have a font family here. I have whatever it's pronounced, Segoy UI, and Verdana, and the other ones. But how big, or how does Segoy UI look like compared to Verdana? It's always problematic, because Verdana is way bigger than Arial. You probably know that. You've seen that before. But you don't really know until you try it, which is really annoying. So it would be nice if I can just hover, and it would tell me and show me what these fonts look like in different sizes. The same with images. Here's an image. Just hover it, and I can see what it looks like. And so this image, of course, it always also works out here. Hover it, and it just works. We're going to look more into images in my optimization talk tomorrow, but I will show you something that is really, really cool. If you want to optimize your website, you probably want to make sure that you have as few HTTP requests as possible. And one of the things that is always kind of problematic is when you have a lot of images in your style sheets. Like I do here, I have a background image. And for small images that appear on all your websites, like they're part of the overall layout of your page, and if it's a small image, it makes sense if we can embed it directly into the style sheet. And that is completely possible. You can take the byte array, read the bytes from the actual image PNG file, base64 encode it into a string, and paste it directly into the style sheet. It works on IE8 and above. It's a complete standard. It's not like some voodoo trick or anything. But how do you do it? Well, we've introduced this notion of smart tags that you know from C#, this little glyph right here. And we can now say embed as base64 data URI. Clicking it, and here's what we get. And this is what it looks like. Here we go. And it also inserted this little thing for IE6 and IE7 is what it says. So one of the things that we've been very, very keen on doing is to make sure that any real-world scenario that you have to do to make your site work in all the browsers, that we support you in that. In 2010, if you used a hack like this is a hack, it has the star in front of background. That means that any browser will completely ignore it except for IE6 and IE7. Believe it or not, they had a bug. So this allows them to kind of revert back to the old behavior. But we've taken it a step further. If I want this entire selector, this entire CSS rule, only to apply to certain browsers, I can actually do that. I can say, make this selector visible to IE7 only. And it looks like this. So these are the tricks that we know that we have to do from time to time. And we don't want to say, hey, if the W3C doesn't like it, then we're going to flag it as invalid. No, we're going to help you do the stuff that you need to do to make stuff work in browsers. This is one of the biggest pain points in CSS. The fact that you can write a lot of CSS and you have no clue if it's actually going to work. Do you have all the browsers installed? Do you have all the versions of IE? Some of you might have, but how long is it going to take you to verify it in all the browsers? And then you add another feature, and you have to do it all over again. And that's what your day is about, right? You do that many, many hours a week. So that's why we've added some dynamic snippets. So let me write animation. As you can see here, as I type, we get the IntelliSense up here, and some of the icons have this little scissor icon. This means snippets. So I can do animation. I can do animation duration. The way I can write it is actually any do. Okay? So the IntelliSense is now so smart that it will, you can kind of fuzzy search, which completely changes the way you write CSS. At least it has for me. It's way faster now. For instance, text decoration, TEDE. Right? Let's do animation duration. I hit tab, and I automatically get all of the vendor specifics that I need for all the browsers. Let's set it to 1 second. Thank you, Web Essentials. And here we go. So you see here how these things line up. I change one of them, and they all change. Tiny little cuts that we can remove here. If I forgot some of them, go here. I think I perhaps need to go up here. Have you seen the quick launch? Here we go. So quick launch is a nice way to do all this stuff. Let's detect errors. So this is the one I told you. If you use the code only profile as I am right here, by default, you don't get any errors. Unfortunately, that was an oversight on my part that I did not fix that so that you always would get errors in Visual Studio 2012. This will be fixed. You always want these, and here's why. You get an error. This is not good. And it says, browser compatibility, add missing vendor-specific property to animation duration. You're missing Moz, Opera, and WebKit. Ooh. So does that mean that I have to delete this and then do the whole animation tap? And well, you could do that, but you could also use this as a smart tag. Add missing vendor specifics. Here we go. So this makes it much, much easier. And of course, if you have a big document and you just want to have this happen for all your lines of code in your CSS, you can just right-click and say, add missing vendor specifics, right there. And then it does it for your entire document. Oh, did you see this error, by the way? This is JS hint in JavaScript. Let me save this. On save, it does some stuff here. So let's save. Then it updates. Now there's no error. Let's create var I equals 1. And I forget the semicolon. I save. And now it's going to tell me I missed the semicolon. Save it again, and the error is gone. So we actually now run your it's not only in CSS where we have this real-world validation of your code. It's also now in JavaScript. Really, really powerful stuff. Now, some people actually use RGB colors. I personally like hex, but some people, they like RGB. So it would be cool if they could just convert directly to RGB. Some people, for some weird reason, probably people who use Opera, they like HSL, so they can do that too. But, and this is an experimental feature. This is like, we haven't really talked about it before much, but, excuse me, you have sometimes a design manual that you get from your design team. And you sit there as a developer, and maybe you get like this PDF document saying, well, we have these colors, and you know this is our logo, and all, you know this design manual or some sort of spec. So it would be nice if there was a way for us to get tooling support for a design manual. So let's do that, actually. So I'm going to right-click my project node here, go to Web Essentials, and say Create Color Palette. And it creates a color palette right here in my solution items. So here I have colors. And they can be anything I want. And I even get IntelliSense saying it only accepts color. There's nothing else here. If I do display block, it says, hey, you can't, you know, this is not valid. You can't do that. So that's cool. That gives us our document here. And what it does is that we can go into our CSS file, and when I now open my color picker, it only shows the valid colors that I have in that document that I just created. There are no other colors here. The really, really interesting thing about this is that, and we've looked at hundreds, if not thousands, of real-world CSS files. Gray, the color gray, we usually find 10 to 15 colors of gray that you can't tell them apart, but they're all different. If you have a tool like this, then you're not even going to have that issue at all. You just create it once, and that's your allowed gray. So right now, if I use a color that's not on the list, it will not actually flag it as invalid, but I think it should. And we probably will do that. Does this make sense? Is this like thumbs up or thumbs down? Awesome. That's cool. That means that we're probably gonna finish it up and get a real developer to do it. Oh yeah, if I hover my base64, I still get the preview. It's the details. It's always the details, you know? So how many people here use less? Okay, like a handful or two. So less has been something that we've been playing around with a lot. It is something that's very dear to my heart. And less basically is a superset of CSS. Any CSS document that's valid CSS is also a valid less document. So if you've seen some TypeScript talks, you know that any JavaScript file is also valid TypeScript. But then we can add a little bit extra on top, extra functionality. And basically, less, there are other stuff. There's less, that's one version. There's something called SAS. There's something called Stylus. We have a less editor now, as of last Monday. And if I open a less file, here's what I get. So on my left, I have my less. And in this case, it's just CSS, right? There's nothing special going on here. It's basically just CSS. I just took my .css document and renamed it to .less as the file extension. What we're doing automatically now is that we're showing you the compiled CSS on the right side. So you can always see the compilation. So less file compiles into CSS. And that's what we're going to send to the browser. So I can start doing some stuff that is specific to less. And one of the really, really cool things about it is that we have functionality to do variables and to do functions that we can reuse. So let's take this transform property right here. And this is probably something that I'm going to use over and over again. So it would be nice if I can remove it, refactor it into a function that I can call from my other list files. And I can just right-click my selection, and I can say extract to mixin. Mixin is what less calls a function. So let's call this rotate. And you can now see how this works. My header file just calls the .rotate, which is the function that I just defined above. If I save this, actually let me make a change down here, because right now nothing has actually changed. I just refactored something. So let me change block to inline. Now I'm going to hit save. And you can see that we now update the preview over here. This is actually the CSS that's compiled, and we can see that it looks the same. When you look at less files, the number one thing that people use is putting colors in variables. Because it would be kind of nice if you could have all your colors like in one less file and then just reference those colors from wherever you need it, from your like your style sheet, your less style sheets. So in less files, we now have this capability, and this is specific to colors, that I have this smart tag. Zoom in here. And I can now say extract all to variable. Extract all to variable. That means all instances of this color. Let's call it background color. So both of these, they had the same color. They now reference my variable up here. And if I save, it should look exactly the same, which it does. Nothing changed. So now I can refactor all these things out, and I can get a much, much cleaner user experience here as a developer. This is something that we've been missing for CSS for so long, and it's one of the reasons why so many people don't like CSS, because it does not have the capabilities that we're kind of expecting from modern languages, right? But now it does. So the way you do that is that you probably want to take all your variables and all your mixins and put them into some files, and then you want to consume those variables and mixins from other files. Right? Just as you refactor your C# program or whatever, you have like, maybe you have a class with helper methods and extension methods that you want to call from elsewhere. So here I have another file. It imports the first file. Okay? So if I save this guy, we can see, since this actually is empty, the less compiler says, well, I'm going to ignore it then. So we had a header, so we should probably figure something else out. Let's do a div, just for the fun of it. Did you see what happened? I get full IntelliSense for this stuff now. Section is here. So finally, a little bit more clever IntelliSense in CSS. And now I can actually call in to my imported file. So now I can call the rotate function, or mixin. And I get full IntelliSense for it, because I have the import. We can now, so we actually now walk the import chain to figure out like what's available to you in the context you're in. So now you can just say rotate. Here you go. And let me save this. And this is what you get. And we can do the same thing for the color. Background color. Save. Doink. And if I mouse over any of these, it's going to tell me what's inside my rotate function in the other file. What is the value of the color? And now I know you're thinking, well, why don't we show that little color square if we know it's a color, right? It's simply just because we haven't gotten to it yet. We will do that. One thing that we don't have here, except for this color square, is F12, go to definition. That would be really nice, right? If I can be on my variable, say F12, and it's going to take you into where you defined that variable. That is coming in the next update that hopefully is going to be April. We just didn't have time for it this time around. So not only less, we also have CoffeeScript. Works in the same way. You get your CoffeeScript on the left, and you get the compiled JavaScript on the right. And if I change something and hit save, it updates automatically. So we do this for CoffeeScript, less, and TypeScript. And again, you need Web Essentials to do this. We moved the entire less editor from Web Essentials and into the official WebTools 2012.2 update. But we did not move all this a preview window and compilation and all this stuff, that still lives in Web Essentials. So you need both. Here's one that I like. I was doing GitHub, some projects on GitHub recently, and I had to do some Markdown. And it kind of annoyed me that I didn't know Markdown, and I had to go somewhere and kind of learn it. So it would be nice if I could just have, use the infrastructure that I already had to build up right here. So you see, we do the same thing. I have Markdown on the left, and I actually run a browser instance on the right. So this is actually a browser running the compiled HTML generated from Markdown, which is right here. So it doesn't really do much. I'm gonna do some more stuff so that as you type a headline, which is the pound, and then it says expect more from tooling, that's clearly an H1. So I want to make sure that it also has the right size, font size, over on the left side. But that's for another day. But it's all these small little things, right? We don't really think about them, but there are thousands of small little things that kind of annoy us every day. We've just gotten used to them. We don't even think about it anymore. Any questions? Okay. And by the way, someone was out sick. Some of the speakers tomorrow is out sick, so I'm going to do a complete session tomorrow on how to build Visual Studio extension that does stuff like this. It's really, really easy. It just seems scary, So hopefully if you're interested in seeing if you can build your own Web Essentials stuff, you should come to my talk at 10:50. And we're going to look at the code of Web Essentials, which has never ever been shown to anyone before. Not even within my team. True story. I'm too embarrassed because they're really good developers. So these are some of the smaller things, but we have a lot of these fixes. So one of my favorite small little features that are completely unexpected, like my way I could reverse a string and could create a video tag out of a div super easily, then there's something else that doesn't really bother me unless I really need it. And you might have run into this issue. You want, on your blog or on a website you're building, you want to display some tweets, for instance. And you want to consume a JSON REST API. And you want to do that through C#. You want to get all the response coming from REST API. In this case, it's Twitter. I want a widget on my blog, my last 5 tweets, and I have to talk to the Twitter REST API. Now, how do I do that? Well, back in the good old days, we could use SOAP. And I would just say add service reference and point it to my SOAP endpoint, and I would just have the entire thing scaffolded out for me so I didn't even have to know SOAP. It would just create a whole bunch of classes that would help me with that. And that was an awesome experience. It doesn't really work that way in REST APIs. There is no format like SOAP envelopes and WSDL documents that would describe the data model in JSON. So we can't do that. OData has some really good stuff, but Twitter does not use OData. So the way you would do it is that you would go into Twitter's developer site, and you would look at some of their examples of how to use their API. And you would see like what type of JSON should you post to them, and what kind of JSON responds back to you, and you could parse it. So you have to go to C# and you have to look at the JSON and figure out how the C# version looks compared to the JSON one, and then you can serialize between the two when you're done. And this is actually from Twitter. So that's really cumbersome if I had to do that whole thing manually. So if I can just copy from Twitter's website and then go into my C# here, right click, paste special, paste JSON as classes, and then have it done for me. That's going to save me a lot of time. It's just one of these things. So this one also started in Web Essentials and is now in the official product. It works for C# and VB, but it's actually extendable. So maybe that's what we should look at tomorrow, how to write one for TypeScript or F#. We could totally do that. It's really easy. So Visual Studio is interesting in a team perspective. There's a lot of settings that are relevant as a team. Are you using spaces or tabs? Right? How many people have always had problems with when you do a check-in and get latest and all that stuff, and then some other team member screwed it all up, right? It's really annoying. And so we've been trying to look at how can we make sure that we can roam all your settings in your team. And the way we do that in Web Essentials is through here. So I can go up here and say Web Essentials, and I get this guy up. And I have like all these settings. It's actually quite a lot for CoffeeScript and JS Hint. And here we go. So sometimes I actually want to have my settings to be solution-based. Check them into my solution, so whenever my coworker gets latest, we're using the same settings. And there's a lot of ways we can do that. There's a lot of complicated ways. This is not one of them. Right-click, Web Essentials, create solution settings. Boom. End of story. So now I have a settings file. And it's basically just a dump of XML. But now I can check it into my solution, and that means that I have all the same settings. So this is really, really powerful for anything related to Web Essentials. We're looking at how we can bring that in to the entire Visual Studio product, so everything will kind of do this, not necessarily as an item in your solution, but the effect will be the same. So we're trying to investigate how we can do that on a larger scale. This is something that's been bothering me for a long time. Another little funny experiment that the core team has been working on, and they actually published an extension that does this, but no one noticed. I think there's like 500 or 600 downloads in 3 weeks, which is pretty low when you think about it. It's the Visual Studio core team that, you know, in their day off, goofed around and did some really awesome stuff. Do you know Control Comma? How many people know Control Comma? Not very many. Control Comma is a way that we get, like, we can search throughout our entire project or solution. We can search for symbols, we can search for file names, we can do a lot of easy navigation just using keyboard Control Comma. Here's a new version of that that they released. I hit Control Comma, and I get this guy up. Okay. So this does a little extra. I can go to line. So now it tries to combine all these different things. Control G, we probably all used, go to line. Control G still works, Control G. And it adds that little colon in front of it. So I can say go to line 20. And hopefully that's what it did. Oh, I don't have line numbers over here, but I'm sure that we're on line 20 right now. And I can search for other stuff, root object. That's where we are, so that's good. But a really, really easy way to navigate. And if you have ever used Sublime Text, this is like one of their coolest features in my mind. And now we actually have this. It's a free download. It's called, what is it called? Let's take a look. Extension and updates. This is where you get all your extensions. Inline Navigate 2. That's what it's called. So if you want to install all this stuff, I'm going to write a blog post where I list all these extensions. But you can always go here and just search for it. Search for Web Essentials. And you should probably go into the online tab. Are we online? It appears that we are not. Oh, we are. Here we go. So that's how that works. And I've been trying to get them to actually push to get this in to the next version of Visual Studio. Does this make sense to you? Does this feature, is this a good kind of search box? Thumbs up or down? Thumbs up. Awesome. This is, it's good that it's being recorded because then I can just show it to the team. So thank you. It gives me some leverage in an area where I have none, so that's good. Images. Have you ever tried to optimize an image? How many people here have tried to optimize an image for file size? Shrink it. Okay, that's a lot of you, most of you. This is really, really difficult to do. Optimizing an image, well, that means different things. It means we should create smaller size, like for thumbnails. That also reduces the file size, hopefully. But it could also mean that here we have an image. Can we optimize it? Can we make it smaller without jeopardizing file size? Yes, we can do that. And how do we do that? Well, we can go to paint.net, we can go to Photoshop, again, if we have 2 extra gigs of RAM that we're not using. And we can like save for web, or there's some gestures we can do. Even if you do that, you can still optimize more. There are some really, really great tools out there. You might have heard of PNG Gauntlet, Image Magic, and so on. They by themselves are really good. But when they become really, really good is if we combine them. That means we first run our image through Image Magic, then through PNG Gauntlet, then through whatever they're called, like 5 different ones of them. That's when we get the real optimization, like way beyond what we can do inside Photoshop or any similar app. And there are some great services that does that for us, because it is kind of cumbersome. You have to do it through command line and all these things. But there are some services. One is called smushit.com. This is Yahoo. Yahoo built this one. It's completely free. You upload your images, and it compresses them, and you just download them and put them in your project. PunyPNG.com is another one. It's really good, especially for animated GIFs. It can really, if you have like spinners or loaders, it's really good at that. So, but of course, it takes time. So it would be nice if I can just go in and right-click my file right here. Let's do this one. Actually, let's copy this one, just to be sure. I can just right-click my file, and I can say optimize image. And this is a small file, but I now saved 31%. This is a very small image. What if this image was 20 kilobytes, 100 kilobytes? You can significantly reduce the size of your page if you use this little tool. And what it does, it actually uses Smashit.com, because Smashit.com has an API. The code for this, the image optimizer extension, is on CodePlex. I think it's just imageoptimizer.codeplex.com. And there is a DLL that's called the Cruncher, I believe it is. And that's standalone. You can use that in your own project. For instance, if people can upload images, their profile images or whatever, on your website, when they do that, you can call into this DLL and have it run it through Smashit, so you always have the smallest possible image. This is really, really cool. And completely impossible to do before, because you always get new versions of images from your designers and so on. Well, now it's just a right-click away. And of course, you can you could have just right-clicked the entire folder, and then it would take all of them. So this is something we're looking into as well. It's a little bit more complex. If you've ever dealt with image optimization, like on a byte level manually through unsafe C#, you know that it's pretty hairy stuff. But hopefully, it's going to make it into the product. Okay. Let's go back to CSS, because we all love CSS now. Hopefully we all love CSS. Certain things are really difficult. So we've talked about, like, we want to make sure your real-world scenarios work, that when you write some CSS, that it actually does work in all the browsers, that you have the vendor's prefixes, right? But what if you want to add some new capabilities? So this is kind of a different problem. Right? Now we make sure that the features you have, they work across the board. We're going to help you with that. But what about new features? What if I want to make sure that my app looks good on a mobile phone? Then I probably need a media query. And how do I do that? Well, here we go. Media, tab, and I do tab again. And we do the whole thing for you. We do not want you, and we do not want me, as I'm a web developer too. I don't want to go through from Visual Studio into a browser, like a search engine, and back all day long. I want to make sure that my workflow keeps me in Visual Studio where I'm most productive. So we're kind of doing a lot of this stuff. Here's another one. Font face. If I want to embed a font, how do I do that? Well, look no further. We have you completely covered here. Do you ever do stuff like this? Contacts, page, and then you do, you know, something like this. Right? You've seen this in CSS before. And that's kind of how you separate and refactor you don't really refactor, you just say, well, this section is now the menu, and this is the context page, and then this is the footer. And it becomes a little bit annoying. But that's kind of how we're used to doing stuff. Well, now I can just take my stuff here, and I can say surround with region. Right, and that can say context page. Here we go. I know people, regions are always difficult. Some people hate them, some people love them. In CSS, they make so much sense. It really is pretty cool. But that was not really refactoring. That's more like, hey, how does this, I want to just segment my style sheet here. But sometimes I want to do real refactoring. Like, for instance, move my footer, in this case, and put it in a different document. So I can take the entire contacts page, which is the one I have right here, and if I can just right-click and say extract to file, and I can create another one called the contacts page. Go. And basically it does exactly that. So it creates a contacts page next to the file I was at. So we can start refactoring these things. Now we're in trouble, because now I have two files. So now I have to include two style sheets on my page. That's annoying. First of all, it's annoying because now I have to do more work, but also because now I have an additional HTTP request. Right, that's not performant. I want as few HTTP requests as possible. So what I can do is I can take my two files, and I can right-click, and I can say, create CSS bundle file. What should we call it? Main. Why not? And we get this bundle XML file. And it tells us, yeah, we have context page and site. And maybe that was not the order in which I want them bundled up. Maybe I want them to look like this. So site first and then context page. And then if we look down here, we can see that we now have this thing. So this is now what it looks like. So we have both files, and we also have them minified, the min file. So now I only have to basically use the min version. I only have to reference the minified file. So now we're down to one request again, but I can kind of refactor all my code in logical separate files, just as I do in my C#. You know, one file per class. So, yeah, a lot of people do that. We can do that with CSS now. We can do the same exact thing with JavaScript. We don't have to use a built task. We don't have to use a runtime component like System Web Optimization. I'm sure some of you have looked at System Web Optimization, which we ship with .NET 4.5. It's on NuGet. That's a runtime version of this. This is design time. If you don't like having bundle files and the min files in the project, don't use this. Just use the System Web Optimization stuff, the runtime bundling. If you don't care, I'm one of them. I prefer this way. Then I kind of know what's going on. Oh yeah, first child. We can now see exactly what browsers this HTML pseudo class works in. We can see Firefox 3, i7, Opera 9.5, and so on. Okay, this is the first child. Hover. Well, it kind of works in them all. Background image. Moss animation. Funny, only Firefox supports the Mozilla one. That was expected. So here we go. So we spend a lot of time, trust me, a lot of time finding out what browsers support what. Over 6 months. If you go to some of these websites like caniuse.com, where it kind of lists what the individual browsers support, it's a great resource. But if you go to some of the other ones, they don't agree. So it's really difficult to actually know for sure. So we actually, all this stuff, we actually ran all the browsers to figure this out. This was not a small task. But it allows us to do some really cool stuff. So for instance, you saw here how I just did animation duration and hit tab, and it would automatically give me all my vendor prefixes. Notice that it didn't have the MS for Internet Explorer prefix. That's because MS does not support the animation duration. They only support the standard one, the one just called animation duration. There is not a -ms-animation duration. We know that, so we don't apply it. But maybe you don't care about IE or Opera. You're only writing for WebKit. So you don't actually want us to do all this stuff. Well, just select browsers, and you can just remove the ones you don't care about. There we go. And that's it. Should we try it? I don't think I need a restart for this. I do. Oh, damn it. Okay. So, I know what you're thinking. Well, that's good and fine and all, but next week there's a new version of Firefox, right? In a year it's like Firefox 281. So things move pretty fast. So how are we up to date? Well, all of the CSS XML schema files, and that's all they are, in the Visual Studio install directory we have each CSS module as its own XML file. And we down there we can say, oh, you have display block, right? So the display property, there's a attribute say which browsers support the display property. And we're going to keep updating that but you also know that as soon as the Visual Studio is released, in this case in August 2012, then the next day, a new browser is coming out, and we're going to be irrelevant. But we're actually updating this live. If you have Web Essentials, as soon as anything happens and we update the schema files, Web Essentials will automatically download them to your box and apply them. You don't have to restart. It's just me that has to restart, apparently. You don't have to restart. It just applies automatically. You don't have to think about that. So all the new browsers coming out, all the new modules coming out from W3C, you get that benefit automatically. So, and that's another reason why you always want to leave your actually error list. You want to leave it on, because now you can actually be certain that we update these things. You're never going to use something that that we don't know about. And if you do, you should tell us, because then we simply haven't heard about it. It's something obscure, perhaps. So please tell us if you find something, and we can fix it. And 2 seconds later, you will have that fixed without doing anything. So we are out of time in a couple of minutes. Do you have any questions? There is one right here. Please, again. The bundling, does it also support less? No, for a very good reason. What is a less bundle? Here I have two less files. Let's say I have a third less file that I call bundle.less. I'll just do this, right? Then that's my bundle file. Because when I save this, it will actually produce the output of those two files. So that's exactly the same thing. It would be overkill if I did a less version of this. There was another one over here. Can Page Inspector handle less? No. We're actually looking into that right now. And our findings are that because the less compiler does not have source maps, there's no way we can actually go back. But we figured out we could use some heuristics to actually do the mapping, but it is not accurate. But maybe it's like 70% accurate. So we don't really know if we should wait for source map to work. We haven't talked about source maps at all. It's an emerging standard of source mapping. But less does not have that yet. So no. Yep, in the back here. Yes. So the question is, if I make a change in my CSS files and I'm using this new bundling thing. So if I go in here, I have my bundle. Let's just open this guy. And let me make a change in site. I'm just going to save it now. Well, let's do something here. Let's do block. I'm going to save this guy. Now Visual Studio says, hey, main.css has been updated, blah, blah, blah. That's cool. Main, that was our bundle file. So now if I go back to the bundle file, we can now see that I have a display block. So as you save, as you build, the bundle files are automatically kept up to date. You don't have to think about these things. And you can do it automatically. There's keyboard shortcuts to say, hey, recompile all my bundles, or rerun all my TypeScript, rerun all my less. You can also set it up to it happening automatically when you build. There's settings for all that stuff. I think we have time for one more. Yes, in the back. How does JavaScript debugging work with bundling? It works pretty good. The short answer, of course, is that in 2012, if you have a bundle file, and you debug, you're actually going to debug that bundle file. So let's say you're bundling five different JavaScript files. Then that file containing all of them is where you're debugging. Now, having said that, if you're using the minified one, and we can demonstrate that easily here, I'm going to take my script, right-click it, and say minify. I could bundle it as well, and it would kind of do the same thing. It creates a map file. This is a source map. TypeScript actually adds source map debugging support to Visual Studio 2012. However, it doesn't really work that well for plain JavaScript files in a web scenario. But that is definitely coming. So as soon as we get the full source map support, you can totally debug your way through any bundled or minified JavaScript file. Yes, but not today. It's coming, though. OK, 30 seconds left. Yes, over here. Can you repeat? Yeah. Yes, I got the question. The question is, if I start separating my code into several different JavaScript files, how will IntelliSense then work? Because we don't have this notion of importing another file in JavaScript. That doesn't really exist. But it does completely exist in Visual Studio. So again, we can cheat. Where the language comes short, we can kind of step in and fix stuff. So one of the ways we do that, here's my script file, is the underscore references. Okay. So in my underscore references, I'm now pointing to my jQuery file, which is in here. Okay. That means that from my file here, I have no here. There's no reference to jQuery, but I should, cross fingers, be able to get full, and I do. So that's lucky. Get full IntelliSense for jQuery. Right. You could do that /reference in your own file, just in the same file, but you can also just use underscore references, and the way that works. And this is like a special file. Underscore references is special. It has to be in the script folder. But you can basically take any file and move it here. I'm just going to drag and drop. And it creates this thing. That means that now this file, scripts.js, is now in the global IntelliSense scope. And it will work anywhere. We're working on having this to be automatic. So you'll see that coming out 3 months, 4 months, hopefully, where we automatically sync this file. So you don't have to worry about that. IntelliSense just works everywhere. We're not quite there yet. I hope that answers your question. Well, time's up. I'm 3 minutes over. I'm sorry about that. Thank you very much for coming.